Miami New Times reported Tim Elfring broke a sensational story when he reported that a Miami clinic called Biogenesis had been supplying performance-enhancing drugs to baseball players, including Alex Rodriguez, then the highest-paid player in the game. The resulting investigation led to Rodriguez's suspension and dug deep to find out who was supplying these illegal drugs and how pervasive they were in the sport. Tim Elfrink and Gus Garcia Roberts, an investigative reporter for Newsday, fill in the details of the story in their book Blood Sport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era. It's published by Dutton, and I'm very pleased that it brings Tim Elfrink and Gus Garcia Roberts to our show today. Hello.
Hi, great to be on.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Tim, how did you first learn about Biogenesis?
Well, it's a pretty incredible story. This whole thing actually started over a fight over $4,000 down here in South Florida between a former client of this clinic, Biogenesis, which is a so-called anti-aging clinic. It's down here in Coral Gables, Florida, you know, right on one of the busiest stretches of road in Miami.
What does anti-aging mean?
Well, it's sort of an industry that's exploded here in the last 10 years, and essentially the biggest part of the business of these clinics is they sell human growth hormone, testosterone, and often anabolic steroids to their customers, and who are often a sort of mix of bodybuilders and men and women in their 40s and 50s that are kind of looking to get a little bit of an edge to maybe get their beach body back or whatever other kind of advantage they're looking for.
So and, Florida, because it's the home of the Fountain of Youth.
It's an interesting way to look at it. It is the state that is famous for the long ago search for a fountain of youth, and today the just complete lack of regulation and oversight in the healthcare industry has led to a very fertile territory for these kind of clinics to just explode across the state. We found more than 540 of them when we were doing the research for this book all over the state.
Yeah, it's the home of the medical scams nowadays.
Well, how did you discover that it was supplying athletes with illegal performance-enhancing drugs?
Well, an investor down here put $4,000 into the clinic, and he wasn't paid back. The guy who owned it, a man named Tony Bosch, was pretty famous for running fast and loose with money and screwing over investors, never paying them back. And when he didn't pay this investor back, he took a whole stack of records from this clinic, thinking he could use them as collateral to get his money back. And when he started looking through them, he realized what he had, which was pretty good evidence that Bosch had a sort of shadow side business going, selling some of the similar drugs, testosterone, human growth hormone, to professional athletes, including Alex Rodriguez and Ryan Braun. And that investor later shared those records with me, and that became the basis for my story last in January 2013 that sparked this whole thing.
Porter Fisher.
That's right, exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because, Porter didn't exactly know what he had with these records, and neither did I when we first started meeting. They're very confusing, handwritten pages and notebooks, and Tony would use code names for a lot of his athletic clients. So it did take about 3 months of reporting to figure out what we had and to hunt down a number of other clients from the clinic and former employees there to really confirm what these records increasingly seemed to show to me, which was, that he was supplying all these athletes with banned substances.
If I could add, the reason why Anthony Bosch wanted cash from Porter Fisher and saw him as a vehicle to invest in his business was because Fisher was biking along a canal one day and he was hit by a Jaguar and a car, and and through a settlement he received money. And so these are not big financial players, and yet this scandal imploded baseball.
What is Tony Bosch's background? Does he have a medical background, or is he more linked to sports?
Tony came from a really prominent family down here in South Florida, a very prominent medical family. His father's a doctor. His cousin was actually one of the most famous Cuban terrorists in Miami history, a guy who once shot a rocket launcher at a parked communist freighter ship down here in the 70s. But he was never able to find his way into medical school. He didn't have the grades or the focus, and he ended up getting a degree from a school in Belize that was not recognized in the United States. Yet he often wore a lab coat. He called himself Dr. Bosch, and he was able to operate more or less in the open for years here in Miami without any kind of issue with law enforcement.
And Bosch is one of these guys. He always wanted to get into baseball, but he was too small to get into it, to play it. And so we found in the late 80s, early 90s, he actually would sponsor softball teams with his medical earnings. And this was sort of a crazy scene in Miami at the time where you would have cocaine cowboys funding softball teams. And his team was national champions one year, got written up in the Miami Herald. And he was always trying to find these ways to get involved in baseball.
Gus, do the laws of Florida encourage these kinds of clinics?
Sure. I think there's a very permissive attitude in Florida towards...
Right now, the governor is a doctor.
Well, the governor, he was... a company he used to own was convicted of the biggest Medicare fraud in history. So this... Florida has always been known as the sort of the most permissive state in which you can open a clinic like this or really run all sorts of medical operations.
Is this completely a baseball story? If you look closely at most sports, won't you find this kind of thing? We've heard about it in cycling and football and running and right. In Olympic sports.
Well, Bosch was certainly his specialty was baseball. I mean, he set up across the street from what's called Alex Rodriguez Park, which is the ball field where University of Miami plays baseball. And he infiltrated those ranks, and he infiltrated the Major League Baseball as well. But, you know, our belief is that in Florida, there's with the environment that it has, there has to be Anthony Bosch's catering to football and basketball as well.
My guests are Gus Garcia-Roberts of Newsday and Tim Elfrink of the Miami New Times. Their book, Blood Sport, Alex Rodriguez Biogenesis and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era, published by Dutton. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Tim, when were steroids first created?
You know, the backstory is pretty interesting, especially when it comes to baseball, because the first anabolic steroids hit the market in the late 1950s. And were sort of experimentally marketed to a few conditions, to burn patients and some other folks. But also, you know, right off the bat, bodybuilders realized, you know, how these could just change the human body drastically. And, you know, within a decade, they had become completely ubiquitous in bodybuilding and had found a pretty widespread use in sports, particularly American football, where, you know, it was immediately evident the benefits of just putting on this huge amount of muscle mass. But that wasn't true in baseball. You know, baseball is a sport where, you know, tradition is very important, where people tend to think that the way things have been done in the past are the right way to do them. And there was a really long-held belief that putting on too much muscle would ruin your swing or ruin your pitching motion, that it wouldn't help you in baseball.
Ken Griffey Sr. was on our show earlier, and he said that when he started, there may have been one weight in the weight room.
That I heard was him say it. That. And that they discourage weightlifting.
Yeah.
Right.
Very heavily, very heavily. So it didn't take off across baseball the way it did a lot of other sports, and it really until the late 1980s, which was when, you know, guys like particularly Jose Canseco, who incidentally grew up at the same time as Tony Bosch, just a mile north at a high school. They started high school the exact same year. You know, he was really a pioneer, and when he came to the league and won Rookie of the Year, and topped 30 home runs and was just openly, you know, flaunting this steroid-enhanced physique, it became very difficult for players to deny the benefits that the drug could give them.
In his memoir, Jose Canseco takes credit for the steroid situation. So he's proud of it. Were people unaware at the time of the negative aspects of steroids, the negative effects that it has on the body?
Well, I think especially in baseball, as we showed, I mean, before steroids, there was amphetamines and cocaine, both of which helped players through the 162-game grind of a Major League Baseball schedule. And I think baseball players have always put the side effects completely on the back burner, and what really matters is this going to help me stand out on my team?
Weren't amphetamines legal in professional sports at one time?
They were. They didn't really cross the radar. In fact, not just in sports, but in society until 1970, when Congress first created the schedules for drugs and put amphetamines in this higher schedule that was regulated. So until then, there were stories of baseball clubhouses having amphetamines out in bowls in the clubhouse, like M&Ms, basically, for players to sort of grab before they went out to the field.
So coaches and trainers were encouraging the players to take them?
Yeah, if not encouraging, then certainly not discouraging it. And it was so widespread. You read some classic stories from those eras. Most famously, Ball Four, the great classic baseball book, and
Jim Bouton.
Exactly. He writes about how openly the team physicians, all you had to do was ask the team trainer for your latest batch of amphetamines, and they were happy to supply them. And that started to change in the 80s before even the steroid epidemic broke out. It became something much more that had to be done on the underground side of things, but it certainly didn't stop.
One pitcher, Jason Grimsley, told federal investigators that in clubhouses they would have two coffee pots. One said leaded and one said unleaded, and that reflected whether or not amphetamines had been poured into them.
What did the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act call for, and how did Major League Baseball respond?
Well, it was the first, it was the first attempt by the feds. In a way, it sort of sparked the war on drugs as we now know it. But its immediate effect was that amphetamines, you were supposed to have a doctor's prescription, and it was going to be very difficult to get these medications. And the reality was that for Major League Baseball teams, instead of pouring these things into a bowl out in the open, perhaps, you just had to go to your team physician and ask him for a prescription for it.
You write about the first major performance-enhancing drug scandal in Major League history, and it was 1980s in Philadelphia. What happened?
That's right. It's one that people rarely discuss anymore, and I don't think is very well recalled because, at the time it got some press, but it didn't turn into anything like the scandals we're familiar with today. But essentially, a minor league doctor for the Phillies, the same year that they had won the World Series for the first time, was arrested and charged with fraudulently prescribing amphetamines. And prosecutors had said that he was, falsely using the names of all these Phillies players to put out these prescriptions. And when they went to court, it quickly became clear what was actually going on, which was that he really was just providing amphetamines to all these Phillies stars. And prosecutors had to drop the case, and no Phillies were ever charged in the case. But, the district attorney made it clear he was pretty outraged by the whole phenomenon. But I think it's important to draw that distinction because, I think fans have never seen amphetamines the same way they do steroids because they don't have such an obvious effect on the way players play the game. You don't see statistics changing. You don't see these kind of cartoonish physiques coming out on the field. It is certainly a performance-enhancing drug. It helps players stay focused and alert through this grind, but I don't think it has the kind of effects that tend to outrage fans the way that steroids do.
When did baseball start testing athletes?
Well, it's actually, what's really interesting about this is Alex Rodriguez, the thread runs through baseball's relationship with PEDs. In 2003, it seems absurd now, but the union was still resisting even the most bare-bones testing.
In fact, they said that they would burn any results, didn't they?
Right, and of course, if you don't have testing, you really don't have any drug program to speak of. So they had a MLB tried to force their hand, essentially, and there was a blind drug test in which the results were supposed to be kept anonymous, and if over 5% of the players tested positive for PEDs, then they would implement testing the next season. And Alex Rodriguez, it was later revealed, was one of 104 players who tested positive, and so he helped usher in drug testing.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more with my guests, Gus Garcia Roberts of Newsday and Tim Elfrink of the Miami New Times. Their book, Blood Sport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era. It is published by Dutton. We are back with Tim Elfrink of the Miami New Times and Gus Garcia Roberts of Newsday. Their book, Blood Sport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era, is published by Dutton. Alex Rodriguez was on the list of people that Tony Bosch supplied with performing enhancing drugs. You look back at his entire career. When you ask people who knew Alex Rodriguez in high school, what kind of reactions did you get?
Got a lot of dial tones, people saying things like, I like to sleep with both eyes closed at night. I don't want to sleep with one eye open.
They consider him dangerous?
They consider him dangerous to their careers. I mean, most of these guys are high school baseball players. Most people that associated with A-Rod back then were on the teams with him. And he still runs things in Miami as far as baseball goes. He's a major benefactor for University of Miami, which is a staple of the baseball scene down there. So they, you know, their fear is well founded.
How far back do the rumors go? To high school?
The rumors begin in really his junior season. It's funny because
junior season in college,
junior season of high school.
Oh, high school.
His freshman season he went to Christopher Columbus High, which is the same school as Anthony Bosch went to, and Bosch was too small to play. And as it happens, A-Rod himself was considered too small to really play in the way that you would imagine a high school player would a high school A-Rod would play. He ended up going to Westminster Prep, which is a top baseball school. And the reason he transferred there is because he couldn't get any playing time at Columbus. And in his junior season, his body transformed. And we talked to other teammates and also opponents who played against him, and long before A-Rod was associated with steroids in the public eye, there was could be jealousy, or it could have been founded. There was whispers about whether or not he was doping as a teenager.
Were performance enhancing drugs common among high school athletes at the time? How would a kid even get access to them?
They were very common, and to us that was the most important part of the story, was not whether a teenage A-Rod was juicing, but how prevalent it was. I mean, it was, in a way, it was the same situation now, where you could set up a clinic, and a lot of teenagers would buy steroids through the back of weightlifting magazines, and they would just mail it to you. So it was very prevalent.
Now, were the bad side effects well known from the start? Many athletes will say, well, I don't care when I'm playing about what's going to happen later. That's why football players so often wind up playing as recklessly as they do. Would Alex Rodriguez have been aware that this might very well have negative effects on his body as he grew older?
Possibly. We talked to a Florida High School Athletic Association director at the time. This was the guy who governed all sports bodies for youth athletes in Florida. And he said the way that his organization learned of how prevalent the steroid problem was because kids were attacking each other at weightlifting meets. So there was a knowledge that it had an effect on your mood. But I think it's even more so than the Major League Baseball clubhouses. I think these kids want to make it, and they want to get big, and they want to make it to the next level of sport.
Is it all just a matter of strength? Because a listener left a comment on our show page asking, how do steroids make players better hitters? They can't improve hand-eye coordination.
It's a great question. And, you know, one thing that we sort of learned through the reporting is that, you know, a lot of athletes believe the mental side of the game is just as important and a fact when you're taking a performance-enhancing drug. You know, especially as you move up the ranks and you're facing higher and higher talent, feeling like you have some kind of an edge over them, like you have something in your back pocket that they don't have, is hugely important. And I think you saw that with the kind of regimens that Tony Bosch later put together for these guys. You know, one of the things he was famous for was creating essentially little, almost lifesaver candies that had testosterone in them. And these things would give you just a tiny boost of testosterone. You could take them in the middle of a game or before an inning. And it's not really clear how much physically that would really do for you, but I think the idea that you were getting this boost was hugely important and actually was a big reason these guys became so addicted to doing these kind of things.
Because recently we've been hearing that testosterone therapies are not good for a person's health as well. But you're suggesting there's a placebo effect here?
Well, Alex Rodriguez, you know, the first time that he had one of Bosch's gummies, said that they had an explosive effect. It doesn't seem like that would be possible. But if you believe it and you're in the batting box of a Major League Baseball stadium, maybe that matters.
How does A-Rod's cousin, Yuri Sukart, fit into this story?
Sukart is sort of the tragic figure of the book, and he's a really interesting character. He grew up with Alex in Washington Heights, New York. He was born in the Dominican, but he was orphaned by a car accident. And in the early 90s, he was busted selling crack cocaine to a cop in Washington Heights. You know, we sort of studied the case more than anybody would tend to study a piddling hand-to-hand drug deal. And it seemed like the evidence was quite circumstantial against him. He ultimately pled guilty, but it appeared that the reason why he pled guilty, this was 1993, was because Rodriguez was about to start his career with the Mariners. And A-Rod had always told him that he would be his right-hand man in his big league career. So Sukart had this had a felony, which often came up, you know, in legal dealings. He was nearly deported once. And what emerged is a picture of a guy who was really under Rodriguez's thumb and did whatever Rodriguez asked him. And that tended to be being almost his steroids butler.
Well, when Rodriguez joined the Mariners, he became buddies with Jose Canseco.
Right.
So was Jose Canseco A-Rod's mentor and then A-Rod Yuri's mentor in a way?
Yeah, well, Jose Canseco claims that he helped get Alex Rodriguez into steroids. But Yuri was never really a protege of Alex Rodriguez. He was really just the sort of the guy who would get Alex Rodriguez anything he asked for.
He went on to play for the Texas Rangers with a 10-year, $252 million contract. Was that the biggest deal ever in sports up to that time?
Yes,
it
was.
It was, yeah. It was a record deal. And, you know, Alex, when he later admitted in 2009 that he had spent those 3 years in Texas taking steroids, you know, he pointed explicitly to that deal to explain it. You know, he blamed the pressure of having such a massive contract and such a massive pressure to perform as the reason that he tried steroids.
And he delivered. In 2002, he hit 57 home runs.
Right.
But he was also a very good fielder, and I don't think that the steroids helped him on that. And as many people have pointed out, it sure didn't help him hit the curveball.
Right. And to back up a little, I mean, just to show the expectations that were on Alex at this point, the previous biggest contract in sports was $126 million for Kevin Garnett. And the owner of the Rangers sent a message by giving him exactly double that. These are expectations that no athlete in modern sports has faced.
You called the Texas Rangers at the time Team Zero in baseball's performance-enhancing drugs.
Rafael Palmeiro, Jose Canseco went through the Rangers. When you look through the rosters, you see all these guys who at the time were just clubbing homers. And then later, once fans got a little more savvy and baseball got more savvy, were exposed for ties to steroids.
Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. All great home run hitters. And then some pitchers, Roger Clemens, who still denies that he ever took them.
That's what's fascinating about A-Rod is that he came of age as a Major League Baseball player in a time when there was absolutely no enforcement of steroid abuse.
So should he be penalized for the fact that he was doing what was accepted at the time and now in retrospect was something that is unacceptable?
Well, it's a pretty fascinating question. I mean, at the time, he wasn't punished. You know, when he later admitted in 2009 that he had doped for those 3 years, at least in Texas, you know, it was long past the time when he could be punished for doing so, you know, in terms of a suspension. But what's so interesting is that, you know, Alex's career has lasted through that era and into this modern era when enforcement has become very serious, and baseball now has the most, you know, advanced testing program of any sport in the game, and yet, given all that, you know, chose to continue trying to get around this new advanced testing and keep doping when there was no question that he knew that enforcement was happening and that it was explicitly against the rules at this point. So it's, you know, it's interesting to put it in context, but I think it's difficult to have too much sympathy for a guy who, you know, certainly couldn't claim ignorance in 2013 that this was banned or that it was going to result in serious consequences for him.
No, I think more and more we're learning that it's, you know, his is the career that PEDs built.
Now, he got past some of the tests. There are ways of passing the tests even if you're taking the drugs?
Yeah, and that's kind of what Tony Bosch built his specialty on. You know, and it's interesting to contrast Tony Bosch with the other most famous steroid supplier in baseball, a guy named Victor Conti, who was at the center of the Balco scandal in 2005, which centered on Barry Bonds. And, you know, Victor Conti was actually doing some pretty advanced stuff. You know, he was synthesizing East German steroids that could get around all these tests. And that wasn't what Tony did. Tony wasn't synthesizing anything or using any exotic chemicals. He was basically using testosterone, which is, you know, the mother of all anabolic steroids. But what Tony did is what we call microdosing. And the idea was to dope his players to a point that it gave them advantage, but to so strictly control when and how much of the drug they were getting that they could sneak through their testing. And, you know, in a lot of ways, he was very successful. Alex Rodriguez, in particular, never failed a drug test in the 3 years that he was working with Tony Bosch.
Now, there are all sorts of drugs mentioned. There's human growth hormone, HGH. There's clomiphene citrate. Are they different than testosterone and anabolic steroids?
Right. Well, when you refer to clomiphene citrate, which is often referred to as Clomid, the way that came up as far as A-Rod goes, in 2007, he was with the Yankees. He had been traded. And before that season, as we revealed in our book, he received what's called a therapeutic use exemption. And this is it's something under the agreement between the league and the union where a player, if they can prove that they have a medical need for a banned substance, they're allowed to take it for one season. And in 2007, Rodriguez applied and was granted permission to use testosterone. And that, as it happens, was one of his best seasons of his career. He won an MVP, and right after that he signed a new record-breaking contract, $275 million. The next season, 2008, he took Clomid, which doesn't supply testosterone, but it's prescribed in order to boost testosterone in men.
Is he seen as a bad guy? He's now being sued by his lawyer for unpaid legal fees, despite the fact that he has millions and millions of dollars.
I think, I mean, what might be at the heart of that is the fact that he you know, he has hundreds of millions of dollars, but he may be hurting by his own standards after not getting a salary this season. And he also may be bitter that he lost in his battle against the league.
We have very little time, but not so long ago I spoke with the cyclist George Hincapie, a close friend of Lance Armstrong's. He said that at one time everyone was doping in cycling and that the stricter rules and tougher testing made him and many others stop. Do you think the same thing will happen in baseball, Tim?
I do think so. I mean, I think there's no question if you go back and look at this free-flowing era that we now call the steroid era and the effect it had on statistics and the way players looked and the way the game was played. You know, the game's very different now. We're actually having historically low batting average and power hitting season in Major League Baseball, and I don't think that's a coincidence that the statistics have changed on the field that way. And I also think it's worth pointing out, you know, we saw a sort of a sea change in how the union approached the suspensions of Biogenesis.
Tim, we have to leave it there. Tim Elfrink, Gus Garcia Roberts, their book, Blood Sport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era, published by Dutton. Thank you both so much.